Beneath the headlines, behind the timelines, there is a story no one wants you to find. Welcome to Some Unapproved Thinking, where forgotten truths, buried patterns, and invisible systems rise to the surface. You weren't crazy. You were just early. Let's begin.
You know, last time we touched on how the internet's evolution since 2017 has shaped our reality. Today, though, let's shift gears completely and dive into a topic that might surprise you, the orphan train movement. In September 1854, the first orphan train movement placement happened, not in Nebraska, but in Dowagiac, Michigan. 46 children, wooden crates. The local newspaper didn't call it charity. It called them fresh stock. That phrase isn't a metaphor. It's the exact language used in the classified advertisements placed by farmers who needed bodies. But here's what nobody tells you. Those 250,000 orphans on those trains weren't filling empty towns. They were populating towns that were already built, already waiting, already incomplete without them. What if it was a plan that preceded the problem by decades? This is Some Unapproved Thinking.
Thank you to our sponsor, the Dark Horse Entrepreneur Podcast. Unlock your potential with the Dark Horse Entrepreneur AI Escape Plan, the podcast empowering hardworking parents to break free from the 9-to-5 grind through AI-powered side hustles. Check them out at darkhorseentrepreneur.com. Now back to the show.
You've probably heard the sanitized version, the one where the orphan train movement brought parentless children from overcrowded East Coast cities to rural America where they could have a quote-unquote fresh start. Charles Loring Brace, the mastermind, framed it as charity, as salvation, as America's moral obligation. He even wrote the blueprint, a book called The Dangerous Classes of New York, published in 1872, where he laid out his philosophy not as compassion, but as social engineering, the children's aid society. The language was always generous. The practice was industrial. But industrial implies randomness, implies desperation. What if it was something else? What if it was a plan that preceded the problem by decades? Let's start here. In the 1820s, decades before the orphan train movement officially began, Congress passed land grant legislation. Massive tracts of land, thousands of square miles, were allocated to states with one condition. They had to be settled and developed within a specific time frame. Then came the Homestead Act of 1862, which formalized the pressure further, offering 160 acres to any settler willing to work the land. But first, the land had to have settlers. The deadline wasn't flexible. By 1850, entire counties across the Midwest were mapped, surveyed, and structurally prepared for habitation. But they were empty. Rail lines had been laid, infrastructure had been built, towns had been platted with perfect grids, streets named, water mills constructed, and then silence, ghost infrastructure, waiting for ghosts. The orphan crisis in New York City erupted between 1840 and 1854. Suddenly, catastrophically, tens of thousands of children abandoned in the streets. The official story attributes this to industrial migration, poverty, and social collapse, but the timing is worth questioning. The crisis reached its peak in 1852, exactly when the Western infrastructure was complete and the settlement deadline was tightening. Historians call this coincidence. But what if the timeline was reversed? What if the orphan crisis wasn't a crisis at all, but an activation event? Consider the mechanics, if you will. The Children's Aid Society didn't just relocate children, they erased them. New names, along with new identities. Families were separated deliberately. Siblings split across different states, different counties, different train cars. The records were destroyed or hidden. Today, historians can only trace about 5% of the 250,000 children placed through orphan trains. Yeah, you heard that right. Only about 5%. Think about that number. It's not accidental record loss. It's systematic erasure. You can trace the genealogy of almost every major Western settlement back to those trains, the founding families, the original homesteaders, the men and women who built the infrastructure, but the children themselves vanish from the historical record. And those children have an estimated 2 to 3 million descendants alive in America today who have no documented connection to where they actually came from. Here's where it becomes undeniable. The exact towns that received the most orphans experienced population booms that defied economic logic. Tiny settlements with no employment centers, no resources, and no reason for growth suddenly tripled or quadrupled in population within a single decade. The children arrived and they worked from age 6, sometimes earlier. Farm labor, domestic service, mining operations, factory towns in newly developed industrial zones. The labor itself was legal. Childhood labor was normalized. But the scale was architectural. These towns weren't built around existing populations. The populations were built to fill these towns. The railroad companies profited. The land speculators profited. The state governments made their settlement deadlines and claimed the land grants. Congress made the land grants valuable. And the Children's Aid Society, the organization positioned as the savior, became a placement agency for human capital. Charles Loring Brace called his system scientific philanthropy. Yeah, scientific, pay attention, because the language matters. He wasn't speaking like a social reformer. He was speaking like an engineer. In the book, The Dangerous Classes of New York, his model was efficient. His placement rates were documented. His outcomes were predictable. One child per available labor position, one wave of trains, one regional development cycle, all synchronized. And the Children's Aid Society wasn't alone. Running a parallel operation was the New York Foundling Hospital, founded by Sister Mary Irene Fitzgibbon in 1869. Where Brace's program targeted Protestant children through the CAS, the Foundling Hospital ran what they called baby trains, Catholic orphan placements that operated from 1873 all the way to 1929. Two separate organizations, two separate religious tracks, same destination, the unsettled West, same coordination with the same railroad lines, same outcomes. So it appears that this pre-computer algorithm had redundancy built in. But there's a layer deeper. The orphan trains didn't draw from random poverty. No, no. They specifically targeted Irish and Italian children, new immigrants, children whose families could be severed without legal consequence, without native language advocates, and without established community networks fighting for their return. If you pull the demographic data, and historians have, the orphan train movement was basically a soft ethnic cleansing mechanism. Surplus immigrant children were removed from densely populated immigrant neighborhoods and distributed across rural areas where they would assimilate, intermarry, and disappear into a new cultural substrate. By the third generation, they weren't Irish orphans anymore. They were American settlers. The genealogies were sewn into the founding narratives of entire regions. The Children's Aid Society distributed over 250,000 children. The New York Juvenile Asylum, a third major placing organization that sent roughly 6,000 children west, operated alongside them. The official casualty rate, deaths from abuse, accident, and disease, was documented at under 2%. But what about missing children, or runaways, or children who died before they could write home, before they could leave a trace? That very real number is unknowable, and that unknowability is the point. If the system had 5% documented family reunion rates, what was the other 95%'s trajectory? Some survived and assimilated. Some didn't survive. Some survived but were trapped in debt bondage, in indentured servitude disguised as farm work. The system made all outcomes profitable for someone. But here's the mechanism nobody discusses, at least not openly, the boarding out system. Unlike children placed in orphanages where they could be tracked, children that were boarded out to individual families disappeared into rural America. No oversight and no central record keeping. A farmer could work a child until the child was 18, then the contract ended. No wages, no tracing. The child could move, disappear, and die. in a location hundreds of miles from where they started. Seems the system was designed to be untraceable. It was designed for scale. It was designed to populate a continent. And it worked. By 1929, when the last official orphan train departed, the Midwest and Western United States had been settled. The infrastructure had been activated. The Homestead Act deadlines had been met. The land grant conditions had been fulfilled. Congress had awarded the land to the states. Speculators had profited. And now, the towns were permanent. Today, the National Orphan Train Complex in Concordia, Kansas, preserves what little record survives, and even that institution can only document a fraction of what actually happened. The people, the orphan train children and their descendants, had become the foundational layer of American settlement mythology. They built the towns, they were the towns, and their origin was erased. The cultural mythology that developed afterward is critical. American history celebrates the pioneers and settlers who conquered the frontier. But who were these settlers? If you trace their genealogies, most of them appear suddenly, without ancestry, without family history. They have names that shifted from Irish to English, from Italian to Anglicized. They emerge fully formed in census records in 1880 or 1890 with no documented past. They're the orphans. Hundreds of thousands of them. But the mythology repackaged them as heroic homesteaders, as the architects of American expansion, their real origin as displaced, separated, and erased children who were placed and exploited was buried beneath the narrative of American exceptionalism. The evidence scattered across three states proves the timing was coordinated. New York orphan removal peaked in years that align exactly with railroad expansion booms and land grant settlement deadlines in specific western counties. The children arrived in waves that correspond to labor demands, not humanitarian need. The records were destroyed systematically, not through negligence. The Children's Aid Society's founding documents, when cross-referenced with state land grant legislation and railroad company correspondence, reveal overlapping networks of funding and coordination. These institutions were connected. They had the same donors. They had the same board members. They were operating according to a synchronized plan. But here's the trap that forces the moral crack. Those orphans' descendants built America's infrastructure. They fought in wars. They created families. They have 2 to 3 million descendants alive today who have no idea their ancestry begins in a crate on a train, their identity literally assigned by an administrator whose name is lost. Some of them would argue they benefited. They survived. They built lives. But should survival under conditions of systematic erasure and exploitation count as consent? Should the fact that the system worked, that the continent got populated, that the infrastructure functioned, make the mechanism morally neutral? That's the actual question beneath all of this, isn't it? Not whether it happened or not. The evidence is fragmented, but consistent enough that serious historians acknowledge the scale of the orphan train movement. The question here is really whether a system can be both true and normal, both historical and hidden, both beneficial in outcome and catastrophic in origin. The orphan train children's descendants are sitting in your town right now. They might be your neighbors. They're Americans. They're also the proof that America was built on a precisely engineered population reset disguised as humanitarian mercy. You can't unknow this once you see it. Tracy, out.
If this story didn't sit right with you, good. You're not here to be comforted. You're here to see what others overlook. Thanks for exploring some unapproved thinking. Learn more at someunapprovedthinking.com. New episodes drop weekly. Subscribe, share, and keep questioning, because the pattern's still playing out. And next time, we're going deeper.